This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everybody, welcome to Two Out the First. It is July the 8th, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here. This is kind of an emergency version of the show. We were planning to do one anyway, and I hope you had a great July 4th holiday. Whether you're catching us live on stream or whether you are listening to us after the fact as a podcast. But I was kind of searching for things to talk about today, right? I mean, we have Davis Thompson winning John Deere Classic, and you know, there's a 59 from Hayden Springer, and that doesn't seem all that special anymore. And you got Leona McGuire winning in Ireland, and then or in London, and then here's what comes up today. We have apparently a very out of left field Ryder Cup captain announcement that's going to be happening tomorrow in New York City. So you got, I got this morning from the PGA of America news release. You know, hey, we're going to announce the new 2025 U.S. Ryder Cup captain tomorrow in New York at noon Eastern time. Get ready. And they usually do this kind of stuff as kind of a courtesy for these types of announcements. So you can either get on a Zoom call or a conference call line, whatever, and get ready, or if you're going to attend in person. And nothing else was said in there. There's no tip of the hand, like, hey, here's who's going to be the captain, any of those types of things. They try to keep that pretty well under wraps, even though typically this is a very poorly guarded secret, right? Typically, it's we know 3 days in advance, 5 days in advance, who the person's going to be. Well, we didn't get that, and there had been a lot of speculation about who was going to be the next Ryder Cup captain for the USI. We know Luke Donald's going to be the captain. He's coming back. He's going to try to win on the road. He did a great job at Italy stepping in for Henrik Stenson, and you know, it's been wonderful. And there had never really gone this late into the process on the American side without naming a captain. So there was speculation, hey, Tiger's going to be the captain. And Tiger talked about that some, I believe it was in the Masters. You know, we're going to talk with Seth Wall, who was, you know, at the time, the head of the PGA of America, the CEO. Well, he's walking away from that position right now. He's going to move into more of a advisory role. So that kind of created some upheaval. Then you've got Tiger, who may or may not want to do this job right now because he still thinks he's competitive. He's got TGL to get off the ground. He probably has some rules that he wants some concessions. And so that kind of went on the back burner thing. All right, well, maybe Tiger won't do it at Bethpage. Maybe he wants to do it on the road for some reason, which seems weird to me. But okay, that's fine. So then who's going to take his place? And there have been thoughts out there of maybe Stuart Sink could take the job. Stuart's a major champion, played on, you know, these types of team competitions. Seems like a very level-headed guy. A lot of guys like him. You know, that kind of makes sense. Oh, maybe you bring Stricker back. Stricker was tremendously successful at Whistling Straits for a variety of reasons. One, they had a better team, but also, you know, the COVID restrictions, you couldn't have the Europeans come over and run amok as fans and kind of make it a little bit more even in the shouting match. And there were other reasons too. They were getting old, lots of issues on the European side in 21, but Stricker could have had another run at it. And I think the players would have liked that a whole lot. But then here comes this news from Bob Herrig at Sports Illustrated. And kudos to him for getting this story. Keegan Bradley is set to be named the U.S. Ryder Cup captain tomorrow at noon. And at first glance, you think, what the hell? Like, the guy that got passed over for Italy, and by the way, it was documented on the Full Swing show, you know, the heartbreak that happened on his end, and then the call from Zach Johnson telling him he's not going to be on the team after he's almost certain he's going to be on the team, because he should have been on the team. And then now he's going to be the Ryder Cup captain? Like, he's not going to play. He's going to be the captain. He's going to be in charge. Like, what a 180 to go from, all right, well, you're not on the team, you're not quite good enough, you're not part of the boys group, to being the guy who is making the group. Like, the boys group doesn't count anymore. What a call. I kind of, at first, after the shock and awe of it, like, Keegan Bradley? And then you go, okay, well, yeah, I'm in on this. I am in on Keegan Bradley being the U.S. Ryder Cup captain. He's just short of 40, right? I mean, I'm a little over 40. He's just short of 40. He's still very relevant as a professional golfer. Just had one of his best years ever last year. He's still out there competing. I think more importantly than all of those things, which I think all that stuff's kind of sort of matters, but sort of doesn't matter. But the other thing that I really like about Keegan Bradley potentially being the U.S. Ryder Cup captain is he can bust up this post Ryder Cup committee thing that's been going on for a decade now, since 2014, when they brought in Tom Watson, and it didn't go well, and Phil craps all over him, and you know, they're like, we got to form a committee. And then they form the Phil, Tiger, Davis, and Jim Furyk committee. And they all decide the direction they're going. And then they get, you know, Spieth and Thomas involved. And those guys perform well. But the end result is we still, as an American side, I shouldn't say we, I'm not playing, but the United States has not won on the road yet. And it's been still since 1993 that that's happened. Italy was an abject failure. A total disaster. It was over, what, by noon on Friday? Like, when I got there with my wife to watch the back half of the third and fourth match in the first session, we knew it was over. Like, it was done. It was just a matter of how bad it was going to be. And clearly that didn't work. And you had Zach Johnson in the captain's role, who, by all accounts, you know, all criticisms, was not good. Not good at all. He didn't identify the right players. He didn't identify the right teams. But at the same time, also, what are you supposed to do if you're him? Who do you swap in and swap out? Do you take out Sam Burns and replace him with Keegan Bradley? Was that going to be the difference? No. It was an accumulation of things that led to the U.S. failing in Italy. Some of that lays the feet of Zach Johnson. A lot of that, frankly, lays the feet of the players. And that also is what gives me some, you know, a reason to endorse Keegan Bradley as the U.S. Ryder Cup captain. Because in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter, right? First of all, this is an exhibition. It's a really cool exhibition, but it's an exhibition. Two, the odds of the U.S. not winning at home are quite low, right? If we look at, and I think Shane Ryan did this at the time in Italy, so I want to give him credit for it. But if he didn't, well, he still deserves credit. He's a great writer. But I'm pretty sure Shane Ryan did this breakdown of looking at how much more lopsided the Ryder Cup has become in the last 15, 20 years toward the home team. Because they set up the golf course. They designed the tee boxes so that they favor their players. They get everything going in a manner that helps them, right? U.S. or European side. They both do it. So the odds are incredibly stacked against the road team to win, which means the odds are incredibly stacked against Luke Donald and the Europeans to win. Not saying that the job is easy or that there's really nothing for the captain to do. Those are not true things. But what Keegan Bradley has to do to win as the 39-year-old, 12 years removed, 13 years by the time we get there from his last Ryder Cup, captain on United States soil at Bethpage State Park on Long Island with just the red, white, and blue everywhere, Americans going nuts, New Yorkers going nuts, bring in some Bostonians, they'll go nuts. That's a whole lot easier than him showing up to the next one on the road and going, well, I guess we'll figure it out. Here's hoping we end that 34-year streak when we get there. This makes sense. And the biggest underlying for me is this busts up the good old boys corral, the boys group. And Keegan Bradley laid it bare on Golf Channel, I think it was, at the time when he was talking about not making the team. And he said, look, I'm going to have to qualify for this thing on points because I'm not going to get picked. I'm not part of that group. I'm not part of that group of players that is so influential that they can get players picked on the team. You can get your buddy picked to play on the team. You get JT on the team. You could get Sam Burns on the team. Not that those aren't incredibly talented players, but they might not have been really good fits for this last Ryder Cup team. And now you've got a guy in Keegan Bradley who can just say, you know what? No, I'm not going to pick that guy because he's your friend. I'm not going to pick such and such because, for whatever reason, some friendly reason, we are going to put the 12 best guys we can put out there, and I'm going to stick to that. And that might mean upsetting the apple cart. That might mean not picking the right players by the friend group, by the click, but he's going to look at the numbers and say, here's who should play with who in these particular formats, whether it's alternate shot or best ball, and that's what makes you an asset to this team. Not because you have a friend on the team, not because you won a major, got close but didn't qualify, none of that. That's not how the Europeans do it, and that's not how the Americans do it. And the whole idea that that was supposed to come out of the Ryder Cup committee from 10 years ago clearly has not. It's worked just fine on home soil, but it has not worked away. In fact, I feel like it's gotten worse away from home than it was before. Because at least in 2010, there was a shot. It was a couple of shots away from winning on the road at Celtic Manor. And since then, nothing near it. I mean, true abject failure. So the committee idea didn't work on improving the road record. 2018 in Paris was awful. Depends on how many accounts you've read and want to believe, but none of them are good. And then this past time in the fall in Italy was not good either. So let's try something a little bit different. Now, obviously, Keegan Bradley's not captaining on the road, right? So you have to kind of lay the groundwork here that for one of two reasons. One of the reasons is Tiger didn't want to do it, so we needed another person. And we needed a person that cares, is fired up, and is ready to make the tough decisions and say no. And have a reason to say no with no real impact to their standing in golf, to their standing on the PGA Tour. Keegan Bradley doesn't have that baggage. He doesn't have friends to protect. I mean, I'm sure he has friends, but he doesn't have friends to protect among the 12 players who are going to be on this team. He doesn't have to. He's a grown man with kids. He doesn't have to worry about that kind of thing. And I think that works very well to his favor. And also, if the Keegan Bradley model works, maybe there are some other people out there. I'm not sure who those people are, but we'll talk about that. But maybe there are other people out there who can follow in Keegan Bradley's footsteps. The PGA of America says to them, hey, buddy, you're going to be the captain. We don't care about allegiances. You don't have to be aligned with anybody. You make the choices because we want to win. Go out there and get us the win. Or the other thing happens, Tiger goes in 2.5 years from now and says, I'm ready to be a captain. Past that 50-year mark, let's do this thing. And he's the captain. Although I think the PGA of America would love for him to do it on American soil. So now you're talking maybe 29. Or maybe it's a 27 and 29 deal. Maybe, who knows what that back channel or that back door negotiating was with the PGA of America, with Seth Waugh. Also, you've got new leadership coming in. So that's going to change some things. Also, there's always these back rumors with the Saudis and the PGA Tour. If they come together, they would buy the PGA of America's side of the Ryder Cup, which, okay, maybe, but probably not, because that makes so much money. So maybe they're thinking, all right, well, let's shake this thing up, and we might not own this thing in 2 years or 5 years or what. Maybe that's something. No matter the reason, I like Keegan Bradley being the U.S. Ryder Cup captain. And I think it's about time we bust up, as Brendan Porath called, the cabal, and have some different blood in there. Because where were you going to pivot as an American side, right? Zach Johnson felt like a little bit of a pivot. He was still that generation of Davis and Furyk and Phil and Stricker and Tiger, right? I mean, he's 48 years old, the same age as Tiger. So that felt like a little bit of a pivot within that generation. But at a certain point, just like the Europeans did, they moved on to the younger generation. They wanted to have, McGinley is a little bit older than your Stensons and then your Donalds. And you're kind of almost transitioning away from even that part with Garcia and Lee Westwood. And he was kind of that great middle ground of, yeah, he's younger than McGinley. He's younger than that old guard. He's also not tied up with Liv. He's very much involved in being the Ryder Cup captain, not continuing his career, not whatever that is. I mean, he still plays golf, but he knows what he signed up for. And that's what you're looking for on the American side. The Americans have always been so enamored with finding the best available player to be the captain instead of the best available captain to be captain. And maybe Keegan Bradley is the best available captain. He still hasn't unpacked that damn suitcase from Medina 12 years ago. And I hope he brings it to New York tomorrow and starts unpacking that thing and throwing crap out and letting the people know, I am in this to be a champion. I'm in this to be a winner. I'm going to do what it's required to be the winner. And no one's going to stop me, including that boys club. Let's go. You want to line up behind me? Let's make it happen. If that is the end result, and we get into an era where the Americans finally realize that the best captain is not the best player, and it does not have to be purely a ceremonial Hall of Fame recognition role, maybe the Americans have a better chance of winning on the road. Odds are stacked against them forever, but maybe they have a better chance of winning on the road. And if that was the lesson out of 10 years of all of this, realizing the best captains you had weren't the ones that were the most accomplished. They were the ones that did the best work as a captain. Stricker, maybe Bradley. Even Davis Love III did some good things, but he's obviously past the age of being a captain for a third non-consecutive time. So this is a good, interesting transition to the next generation of player. Maybe you go find some guys in their 40s after this. Really not sure who those people are, but gives you something different to look at. I'm in. I love it. Let's go with it. And I understand if you're dismissive of it or think it's weird, but it's an exhibition. At the end of the day, it is an exhibition that we like to watch every couple of years, even though we have a very good idea of what the result is going to be before it even starts. So enjoy for what it is. Let's blow it up and have some fun. I'm all for it. All right. So there's that. I want to give a shout out to the USGA first, because they're doing one of the best things they do this week, which is the US Adaptive Open. I think it's the third year for it. And it's the first year it's not at Pinehurst, it's out in Kansas. And it's a tournament that's finally going to start moving around. They've changed the criteria to qualify to make it a little bit more stringent, make it more a little bit a little tougher toward the national championship kind of level. And they're doing the same thing with the US Senior Open, by the way. And I like that. They have put good resources behind it. They have all kinds of incredible stories competing. It is a celebration of welcoming tons of people into golf. So if you get a little bit of time this week, please spend a couple of days or just a little bit of time each day perusing the leaderboard. Cam Jordan, I believe, from Golf Week is out there covering it, sharing some great stories. I know Beth Ann Nichols usually do it, but Cameron's doing a great job. And just enjoy it. We have someone from Argyle Country Club competing. Jack Bonifant is one of the best guys I know at the club. He's an incredible player. And basically a guy with a neurological disorder can't feel half his body. He's an incredible world-class golfer. And there's so many stories like that. Please spend some time consuming some U.S. Adaptive Open content this week. And then also shout out to Leona McGuire for becoming the first Irish woman to ever win on the Ladies European Tour. She won the Aramco Team Series in London, which Saudi involvement, whatever. But Leona did win. That's cool that she's making history. Good for her. That's great. Now, to the PGA Tour, because that was the only other event we had this week, other than the BMW International Open, where Bernhard Langer made his final DP World Tour start, got the send-off that he deserves. He will get that proper final send-off at the Masters next April, barring any stupid pickleball injuries. But that was really cool to see him get that goodbye. And I've never seen him. So they had a news conference with him after the fact, and he got and I've never really seen him get emotional. And he talked about being embraced and being able to do what he's done for 50 years, 51 years, I believe is what he said. And just, it finally caught up to him, like what he had accomplished. Was it 42 DP World Tour wins? Obviously a couple Masters titles. He was world number one when the ranking debuted, the OWGR debuted, as flawed as it was. But he was the best player in the world at that point. And just an incredible ambassador for golf. He's still a great competitor. That was really cool. One of the better moments of the week. All right, so let's talk about John Deere Classic. So Davis Thompson wins quite easily, sets the tournament scoring record, 28 under total, 256. So he takes out Michael Kim's scoring record. Sorry to Michael Kim, though he had a funny tweet about that on Sunday. But the guy who shot 59, Hayden Springer, wasn't even in the picture of winning the tournament. And he kicked off the week with, you know, 59 and thinking, oh, man. And I foolishly thought maybe Dylan Fratelli could be the first round leader. He was only 13 strokes off the lead that day. But it feels like the value of sub 60 rounds has changed and changed very quickly. I mean, this year on the Korn Ferry Tour, we've had, I think, three sub 60 rounds already. We've had a 57, we've had a 58. I think we had another 59 from podcast. I mean, we've had a lot of sub 60 rounds of Korn Ferry Tour. And 59 just looks, it just looks too easy. I mean, we've had 2 in 4 weeks. And this happens every couple of years where it just, it's like a, it just kind of spreads like wildfire. Like you get 6 or 7 of them in a year, it feels like, between the Korn Ferry Tour and the PGA Tour. Maybe that, you know, you've only ever had one on the DP World Tour. But to have this kind of rash of them, it sort of devalues it, especially on a course, no offense to TPC River Highlands or to Deer Run, which are enjoyable courses, but they're also fairly short and not hard. So you're going to get weeks where 20s under par win, nearly 30 under par wins, and all of a sudden 59 doesn't feel that special. Feels like 57's got to be special now, especially on a course like that, right? And then at River Highlands, where it's already given up a 58, you're not even shooting the course record if you shoot 59. I'm not trying to demean what Hayden Springer's done. That's really cool. None of us here are ever going to shoot 59 on an actual tour-length golf course of any kind, much less one that's, you know, not a par 3 course for 18 holes. It's just not going to happen. So it's still an incredible achievement. But it also feels like maybe we need to pare back 59 watch or make it 58 watch or 57 watch if we're going to do this anymore. And I think it leads to a bigger argument of what fans want from tournament golf. Do they want birdies and eagles? Do they want super low scores? Do they want players in the 20s under par, pushing 30 under par to be the winning score? Is that what people want? Is that the kind of golf they're hoping for? And I know par is just a construct. You can make par 68 and just challenge them to see what they can do. We could do that. But golf fans have been around long enough and are smart enough to know that just changing par doesn't do it. That's why the USGA doesn't do this as kind of outrageously as they once did of changing par at the US Opens. Because people know what the par is for the actual course and what it is for this tournament, and that doesn't really matter. What matters is scoring average. What do you score? That's your par. What's the scoring average? That's par. In the era of strokes gain, and we've been doing this for 20 years now, that's par. Right, relative to the field. So it's just very hard to get excited about a tournament where you know birdies and eagles are around every corner. There's no calamity. There's no fear for the best players that week. And yes, there are players who struggle and shoot over par. And if you shot over par for the week at TPC Deer Run, I mean, that's almost like a disqualifier. Like, you shouldn't get your tour card back. But at the same time, that also is an illustration of how good these players are. That there are players who struggle to break par or struggle to break into the double digits under par for the week. And then you've got players who are in the 20s and 30s, you know, almost 30s under par. So I prefer tournaments where, you know, 12, 13, 14 under is kind of a winning score. And then we use the US Open for what it is. And it's the challenge to be closer to par. I don't need it to be par, but to be closer to par. 4, 5, 6 under. That's great. And then you can have your PGAs where 8, 10, 12, 14 under wins. And I realize Louisville this year was a unique exception because it was wet and the golf course is easy. And there was just no way you could make it difficult without drying out the place, and that wasn't going to happen. Then you've got the Open. Obviously, that's weather dictated. And you've got the Masters. We all know what that is. You've got those four special tournaments where there's some kind of prescribed score. And I think the tour should kind of strive to get better toward 10, 12, 14 under for winning scores. And what does that require? That might mean moving venues, though. You know, TPC River Highlands is, what, 7,000 yards? Deer Run's a little over, what, 7,200 something? I mean, it's not challenging for these guys. So you either remodel these courses that you own and license and make them tougher, or you bring up the rough, or you try to dry out the place more. I don't know what... Without changing a venue, if you can achieve those types of things. But I feel like having too many weeks like that is not good for professional golf. And I think, interestingly enough, the LPGA is a very good proving ground for this concept, because a few years ago, I brought up Beth Ann Nichols. She wrote a really fascinating article about how the LPGA created these setups that were so difficult in terms of length and that relationship to par that players were scoring worse or looked like they were scoring worse than they really were. And that if courses length and hole locations were a little bit more representative of the women's game, the scoring would be better and people would be interested. And now you've got tournaments most weeks where, outside of a couple of venues and of course the majors, winning scores close to 20 under par every time out. And then you get to a U.S. Women's Open like we had this year at Lancaster, where the scoring par mattered, right? And once par mattered, it felt like a lot of the best players that we've identified based on the LPGA Tour schedule had trouble competing. Nelly Korda had trouble competing. Rose Zhang had trouble competing. Lily Vu was injured, so she wasn't really there. But you've got these top players who had trouble competing in that kind of environment. And I think if you have that too much on the PGA Tour, it makes it tougher to figure out the majors, for one. But two, it also kind of makes the majors that much more valuable. So if you can create a almost like a tier structure of like, hey, this is going to be a green light week, like 30 under could win. We need a yellow tier week on the PGA Tour where, you know, 12, 13, 14 under wins. And then you have like a red light week where Jack's Memorial Tournament has become a de facto U.S. Open setup. And we want single digits under par to win if we can do it. I feel like you need to kind of have that almost kind of like tennis has surfaces of, all right, you can win on hard courts because that's the fastest, but how do you handle bounces on grass? How do you maybe handle sliding on the clay? You know, they have three different surfaces to work with. And we don't really, I mean, we have architecture and we have setup and we have firmness and speed. And that's part of setup. So if we can kind of almost give a viewer a better idea of what those are like and kind of set those expectations a little bit better, I think it's a better product in the end than just having a bunch of players get into the 20s under par and then go, you look at the scoreboard and like, are they even playing golf? Are they playing a full-size course? But at the same time, I also want to say I was excited to watch Luke Clanton and Michael Thorpe Bjornsson. They had great weeks. They're both co-runners up. They're the favorites now at the renamed Barbasol Championship. It's called the ISCO or ISCO. Not sure I'm saying the sponsor's name right. Championship in Kentucky. That's the Oppo event this week. We've got the Scottish Open. So that's cool. Very excited to see Renaissance Club. Hopefully it gets windy again. You're going to see a lot of Rory McIlroy's 2-iron from last year in the final round. I'm also very curious what we're going to see of Rory McIlroy in the present after taking golf off the calendar since the U.S. Open, what that's going to look like. Liv is in Spain. The DP World Tour obviously co-sanctions the event, so that's their thing this week. The LPGA has a major. They have the, now what is renamed the Amundi Evian Championship. Not the Amundi Evian Championship. The Amundi Evian Championship. That's in France this week. Good lead into the Olympics. Going to Paris, the week after. So plenty to talk about this week. We got the Korn Ferry Tour back as well. So lots going on. We'll talk about it on live shows Tuesday and Wednesday as well. We'll do audio shows on Thursday and Friday. And that's the way we're going to try and do it. On Wednesday, this show is going to be a bit of a celebration because we're going to share some really cool news. We've got all of our ducks in a row. Cool news is coming. We've alluded to it a bunch of times on the show and on socials and things like that. But the announcement will be out there first of a couple and be a little bit of a party on Wednesday. Shoot me an email, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky, at Ryan Ballingy, Facebook and YouTube, at Ryan Ballingy Golf, at Golf News Net is the handle on every single one of those services to reach Golf News Net. Back with another show tomorrow. Thanks for watching live or after the fact or listening as a podcast. We will catch you next time on Two Off the First.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.